really allowed to have pigeons if you were a royal.
England stopped enforcing this pigeon exclusivity in the mid-1600s. But over a century later in France, peasants who built illicit pigeon houses were still being forced to destroy them. Meanwhile, the elite's pigeons were allowed to fly into peasants' fields and snack on their crops. So pigeon ownership became a flashpoint in the French Revolution.
When the poor rose up, one of the things they did was they smashed all of the pigeon houses. And the people in charge desperately passed through these measures that said that, yes, okay, the poor can keep pigeons.
Pigeons are no longer exclusive to nobility. But next time you see these birds, consider giving them a little more respect. For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
Hi, my name is Taku. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
Peter Jones, and you are indeed listening to Tell Us a Tale, where Jen Hoffman and I are going to share a few of our favorite stories from way back in the 20th century, starting with The Sneetches from Dr. Seuss. And like all of his stories, that's published by Random House.
Now the star-belly Sneetches had bellies with stars. The plain-belly Sneetches had none upon theirs. Those stars weren't so big. They were really so small, you might think such a thing wouldn't matter at all. But, because they had stars, all the star-belly Sneetches would brag, "We're the best kind of Sneetch on the beaches." With their snoots in the air, they would sniff and they'd snort, "We'll have nothing to do with the plain-belly sort." And whenever they met some, when they were out walking, they'd hike right on past them without even talking. When the star-belly children went out to play ball, could a plain belly get in the game? Not at all. You could only play if your bellies had stars, and the plain belly children had none upon theirs. When the star belly sneeches had Frankfurter roasts, or picnics or parties or marshmallow toasts, they never invited the plain belly sneeches. They left them out cold in the dark of the beaches. They kept them away, never let them come near, and that's how they treated them year after year. Then one day, it seems, while the plain belly sneeches were moping and doping along on the beaches, just sitting there wishing their bellies had stars, a stranger zipped up in the strangest of cars.
"My friends,"
he announced in a voice clear and keen,
"my name is Sylvester McMonkey McBean, and I've heard of your troubles. I've heard you're unhappy. But I can fix that. I'm the fix-it-up chappy. I've come here to help you. I have what you need, and my prices are low, and I work at great speed, and my work is 100% guaranteed."
Then quickly, Sylvester McMonkey McBean put together a very peculiar machine, and he said,
"You want stars like a starbelly sneech? My friends, you can have them for $3 each. Just pay me your money and hop right aboard."
So they clambered inside. Then the big machine roared, and it clonked, and it bonked, and it jerked, and it burked, and it bopped them about. But the thing really worked. When the plain belly sneeches popped out, they had stars. They actually did. They had stars upon theirs. Then they yelled at the ones who had stars at the start.
"We're exactly like you. You can't tell us apart. We're all just the same, though, you snooty old smarties. And now we can go to your Frankfurter parties."
"Good grief,"
groaned the ones who had stars at the first.
"We're still the best sneeches, and they are the worst. But now, how in the world will we know?"
They all frowned.
"If which kind is what, all the other way round."
Then up came McBean with a very sly wink, and he said,
"Things are not quite as bad as you think. So you don't know who's who. That is perfectly true. But come with me, friends. Do you know what I'll do? I'll make you again the best sneeches on beaches, and all it will cost you is $10 eaches. Belly stars are no longer in style,"
said McBean.
"What you need is a trip through my star-off machine. This wondrous contraption will take off your stars, so you won't look like sneeches who have them on theirs."
And that handy machine, working very precisely, removed all the stars from their tummies quite nicely. Then, with snoots in the air, they paraded about, and they opened their beaks and they let out a shout,
"We know who is who. Now there isn't a doubt. The best kind of sneeches are sneeches without."
Then, of course, those with stars all got frightfully mad. To be wearing a star now was frightfully bad. Then, of course, old Sylvester McMonkey McBean invited them into his star-off machine. Then, of course, from then on, as you probably guess, things really got into a horrible mess. All the rest of that day, on those wild, screaming beaches, the fix-it-up chappie kept fixing up sneeches, off again, on again, in again, out again. Through the machines, they raced round and about again, changing their stars every minute or two. They kept paying money. They kept running through until neither the plane nor the starbellies knew whether this one was that one, or that one was this one, or which one was what one, or what one was who. Then, when every last cent of their money was spent, the fix-it-up chappie packed up and he went. And he laughed as he drove in his car up the beach.
"They never will learn. No, you can't teach a sneech."
But Mr. McBean was quite wrong. I'm quite happy to say that the sneeches got really quite smart on that day, the day they decided that sneeches are sneeches, and no kind of sneech is the best on the beaches. That day, all the sneeches forgot about stars, and whether they had one or not upon theirs.
Things have come to a pretty pass. Our romance is growing flat. For you like this and the other, while I go for this and that. Goodness knows what the end will be. Oh, I don't know where I'm at. It looks as if must be done.
You say either, I say either, you say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, and I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off. But oh, if we call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might break my heart. So if you like pajamas, I like pajamas. I'll wear pajamas, give up pajamas. For we know we need each other, so we better call the calling off, off. Oh, let's call the whole thing off, yeah.
You say laughter and I say laughter. You say after and I say after. Laughter, laughter, after, after. Let's call the whole thing off. You like vanilla and I like vanilla. You sarsaparilla and I sarsaparilla. Vanilla, vanilla, or chocolate, strawberry. Let's call the whole thing off. But oh, if we call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might break my heart. So if you go for oysters and I go for oysters, I'll order oysters and cancel the oysters. For we know each other, so we better call the calling off, off. Let's call the whole thing off.
Yes, you say either,
and you say either,
you say neither,
and you say neither,
either,
either,
or neither,
or neither.
Let's call the whole thing off. Oh, yes. You like potato,
and you like potato.
You like tomato,
and you like tomato.
Potato,
potato,
tomato,
tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
But oh, if we call the whole thing off, then we must part. And oh, if we ever part, then that might break my heart.
Oh, so if you like pajamas,
you got pajamas.
But we
know we need each other, so we better call the calling of all. Let's call the whole thing off.
Let's call the whole thing off.
The best of Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong. That's right, not Louis. He preferred Louis. That was Let's Call the Whole Thing Off. You are listening to Tell Us a Tale. We are sharing a few classic stories from way back in the 20th century in this half hour. And the next one is one of my all-time favorites, Caps for Sale, a tale of a peddler, some monkeys, and their monkey business. Written by Esper Slobodkina, and that's published by Harper and Row.
Once there was a peddler who sold caps. But he was not like an ordinary peddler carrying his wares on his back. He carried them on top of his head. First, he had on his own
striped cap, then a bunch of gold caps, then brown caps, then blue caps. And on the very top, of course, oh, I got the red caps.
Well, he walked up and down the streets, holding himself very straight so as not to upset his caps. And as he went along, he called,
"Caps, caps for sale, 50 cents a cap."
One morning, he couldn't sell any caps. He walked up the street and he walked down the street calling,
"Caps, caps for sale, 50 cents a cap."
But nobody wanted any caps that morning. Nobody wanted even a red cap. and he began to feel very, very hungry, but he had no money for lunch.
I think I go for walking country. Oh.
And he walked out of town, slowly, slowly, so as not to upset his caps. He walked for a long, long time until he came to a great big tree.
I think this is a nice place for a rest.
And he sat down very slowly under the tree and leaned back little by little against the tree trunk so as not to disturb the caps on his head. Then he put up his hand to feel if they were straight.
Let's see. First I got the checked cap. Yes, this is good. Then the gray caps, yeah, and the brown caps too. Oh, good, good. The blue caps. Then the red caps on. Oh, good. They're on the very top. This makes me so happy.
Well, they were all there. And so he went to sleep. And he slept for a long, long time. When he woke up, he was refreshed and rested. But before standing, he felt with his hand to make sure his caps were in the right place. And all he felt was his own checked cap and one other cap. Well, he looked to the right of him.
No caps.
And he looked to the left of him.
No caps.
He looked to the back of him.
No caps.
And he looked behind the tree.
No caps there either.
Then he looked up into the tree. And what do you think he saw? On every branch sat a monkey. And on every monkey was a gray, a brown, or a blue, or a red cap. The peddler looked at the monkeys, and the monkeys looked at the peddler, and he didn't know what to do. Finally, shaking his finger at them sternly, he said,
"You monkeys, you better give me back my capes."
But the monkeys only shook their fingers back at him and said, Well, this made the peddler angry, so he shook both hands at them and said,
"You monkeys, you better give me back my capes."
But the monkeys only shook both their hands back at him and said, Well, now he felt quite angry, and he stamped his foot and he said,
"You monkeys, you better give me back my capes."
But the monkeys only stamped their feet back at him and said, Well, by this time, the peddler was really, really very, very angry. So he stamped both his feet and shouted,
"You monkeys, you must give me back my capes now!"
But the monkeys only stamped both their feet back at him and said, At last, he became so angry that he pulled off his own cap, threw it on the ground, and began to walk away. But then each monkey pulled off his cap, and all the gray caps and all the brown caps and all the blue caps and all the red caps came flying down out of the tree. So the peddler picked up his caps and put them back on his head.
First my own cap there, and then the other one was already on top of it. And the brown caps and the gray ones and the blue ones, and most importantly, all the red caps right on top.
And slowly, slowly he walked back to town calling,
"Capes, capes for sale, 50 cents a cap."
One day a funny kind of man came walking down the street. He wore a shoe upon his head and hats upon his feet. He raised the shoe and smiled at me. His manners were polite, but never had I seen before such a funny sounding sight. He said,
"Allow me to present your highness with a rose."
And taking out a raisin bun, he held it to my nose. I staggered back against the wall, and then I answered, "Well, I never saw a rose with such a funny sounding smell." He then began to sing dinosaur. And sat down on the ground. You never heard in all your life such a funny feeling sound. My friend, why do you wear two hats upon your feet? I said. He turned the other way about and hopped home on his head.
Off Donovan's album Pied Piper, that was a funny man. Well, for our final classic story from the 20th century, we're going to tell you Dinerella, written by Pamela Duncan Edwards and published by Hyperion Books for Children.
Dora, Doris, and Dinerella lived down in the sand dunes in a dinosaur den. Dora and Doris did nothing all day. They dumped debris around the den. They never did the dusting or the dishes. Dinerella was dainty and dependable. Dora and Doris were dreadful to Dinerella. All day they demanded,
Dinerella, dig the garden.
Dinerella, fetch us drinks now.
Dinerella, would you start the dinner already?
One day a card was delivered to the den.
Dinosaur dance, Duke Dudley's den at dusk. Hors d'oeuvres, dandelion cola, dancing until dawn.
Duke Dudley was the most dashing dinosaur in the dunes.
I would die for a date with the Duke.
Definitely, oh definitely.
Oh, a dance? How divine.
Well, you can't go to the dance, Dinerella. You're just too dowdy.
You're too dull. That's all you are. You're a dull, dull dinosaur, and you don't have a decent dinosaur jewel to wear. Of course, you can't go to the dance.
Poor Dinerella felt down in the dumps as she watched her stepsisters depart. Suddenly, Dinerella heard a droning noise.
Don't be dismal, Dinerella,
said Fairy Dactyl.
You shall go to the dance.
Oh, but I'm so drab, and I don't have decent dinosaur jewels.
I'll soon deal with that, dear. These jewels will outdazzle all the other dinosaur jewels. Don't you worry, dear.
Oh, darling Fairy Dactyl, thank you.
And with her diamonds dangling, she set out for the dance. Dusk had fallen when Dinerella heard a deafening disturbance coming from the direction of Duke Dudley's den.
Oh my, what's that?
A dastardly deed was taking place. A Deinonychus was dragging off the Duke.
I'm done for. He will devour me.
Indeed I will. I'll be digesting you by daybreak.
Dinerella was not a daring dinosaur, but something drastic had to be done.
I may become dessert, but I'm determined to drive away that dreaded carnivore.
Dinerella climbed to the top of the dune.
You disgusting dummy! You drop the dune!
Dinerella began to hurl dirt balls at the Deinonychus. The dumbfounded Deinonychus stopped in disbelief.
Who called me a dummy?
The moon's light caught Dinerella's dangling diamonds. Dots and dabs of light darted toward the Deinonychus.
A devil!
What?
See its dreadful demon eyes!
Dinerella detached a diamond and directed it toward the Deinonychus.
Take that!
The diamond hit the Deinonychus hard in his dentures.
The devil will destroy me with its deadly eyes!
And he dumped Duke Dudley and departed double quick. The den was dense with dinosaurs dashing about in distress.
A demon! We're doomed!
You dimwits! Demons don't throw diamonds. It was a damsel who defended me with her dazzling dinosaur jewel. When I discover her, I shall ask her to be my darling.
All the dinosaur dames were delirious.
The jewel is mine.
No, it's mine.
It's mine. It's mine.
It's mine. It's mine, and you just stay away from it.
No, it's definitely mine. Do you understand what I'm telling you? It's mine, and I want it now. I'm the damsel you desire.
I doubt it. Your dinosaur jewels don't match.
Just then, Fairy Dactyl arrived at the dance. She quickly saw the dilemma.
Where is Dinerella?
Dinarella? That dopey domestic?
Dinarella? She's back at the den. What do you want with her?
But Fairy Dactyl spied Dinarella dodging behind the dune.
Dinarella, dear, come down now.
So down came Dinarella, looking distracted.
She wears but one dazzling jewel. Oh, Dinarella, you're adorable.
Thank you.
You're definitely quite a dish.
Oh, thank you.
I beg you to be my dearest.
Oh, dreamy.
And they danced off into the dawn.
Drat,
said Dora and Doris.
Hey there, Brontosaurus. Don't you know you bore us? Well, how can you explain with your peanut of a brain? Politics or religion, economics or cold fission, you went down the evolution drain. Hey, Tyrannosaurus, well, how can you ignore us? Yes, we know you were the king back when teeth were everything, cause you were vicious, you were mean. Now you are just gasoline, cause you went down the evolution drain. Hey pterodactyl, get used to the fact that we all find your wingspan though colossal, less impressive as a fossil. What were you supposed to be anyway? Some kind of giant punk chicken in the leather? Hey, the Stegosaurus, won't you join the chorus? Cause wagging was to no avail when you had a spiky tail. Now you're only good to do these Japanese monster movies. You went down the evolution drain. And all you crazy saurus, get back in my thesaurus. Let me put you on the shelf. History repeats itself, and someday all our bones will be in a cockroach Smithsonian, and we'll go down the evolution drain. Shoot, bop, do, 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 bop, do,
From a live appearance on Tell Us a Tale, that was Nickeltown performing their tune, Dinosaurus. Well, we're going to close out this half hour with just a bit of Maria Muldaur singing Storybook Ball off her album On the Sunny Side. So we'll see you again soon, right here on Tell Us a Tale.
Okay, it's story time now. Are you ready, boys and girls?
Yeah!
Okay. Okay, be quiet now, because here goes. I'm going to tell this story. Be good.
I want to hear the story of that Goldilocks.
No, I'm going to tell you the story of the storybook ball. Are you ready?
Yeah!
One, two, three.
Up in Mother Goose's book, up in the nursery, Simple Simon said, I'm feeling sad. Said Peter Piper's daughter, so am I. I think we ought to do something that'll make the kiddies glad. Smarty, Smarty said, I think we'll have a party. And he called on the old woman in the shoe. Now the cat, he brought his fiddle, and he played I diddle diddle. And what happened then, I'm gonna tell to you. Little Jackie Horner eating pie up in the corner, stuck in his tumbled-out clock.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, BC.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
What is the forest industry most afraid of? Shifting the conversation from saving old growth to protecting what's left of BC's primary forests, areas with minimal human disturbance and far greater ecological value than tree farms. Save What's Left Conservation Society is a volunteer-run group at the forefront of the movement to save the last remnants of unprotected primary forest through seeking reforms to the government agency, BC Timber Sales. Learn more at savewhatsleft.ca, find us on social media, and please support our vital work through our website.